Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, former television screenwriter Patty Lynn discusses her new memoir, End Credits, How I Broke Up with Hollywood. She is joined by author, podcaster, and publisher Zibby Owens. The following conversation originally took place October 5th, 2023, and was recorded live at the American Writers Museum.
Thank you to everyone who's here in person, and thank you to our friends joining us online. My name is Allison Sansoni. I'm the program director here at the Writers Museum. Thank you all for being here and for valuing the past, present, and future of American writing. In End Credits, Patty Lynn tells the story of how and why she walked away from everything she ever wanted when the cost of achievement in Hollywood became too high. Patty's credits include Freaks and Geeks, Friends, Desperate Housewives, and Breaking Bad. She's also written pilots for Fox, CBS, and Nickelodeon. Her Breaking Bad episode, Grey Matter, was nominated for a Writers Guild Award for Outstanding Script of 2008 in the Episodic Drama category. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband. She's here in conversation with Zibby Owens, an author, publisher, award-winning podcaster, CEO, bookstore owner, and mom of four. Creator and host of the award-winning daily podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, Zibby is also the founder and CEO of Zibby Media, dubbed the Zibbyverse by the LA Times. It includes a publishing house, magazine, podcast network, retreats, classes, Zibby's Book Club, and Zibby's Bookshop, an independent bookstore in Santa Monica, California. A writer herself, Zibby has published a memoir, Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, and a children's book, Princess Charming. Welcome to both of them. Please join me in welcoming them.
Thanks for coming, everybody. This is so nice to see familiar faces out there and be here with Patty today. I'm Zibby, by the way. Okay, Patty, congratulations on End Credits, I Broke Up with Hollywood.
Thank you.
Really getting the most out of this breakup you possibly can. This is the best, you know, milking it for every tear, every experience. Tell everybody here about the book and why you wrote the book and why you broke up with Hollywood.
I'll start with why I broke up with Hollywood.
Okay.
So I worked as a television writer for about 10 years, and it was right from the beginning, I kind of knew this wasn't what I had dreamed it would be. You know, I grew up a child of immigrants. I actually grew up in Downers Grove, Illinois, and I was a latchkey kid, and so I watched a lot of TV every day after school. And I just fell in love with pop culture. And I just, you know, thought, I didn't think at the time that I could work in show business because I didn't know anybody who worked in show business. My family all did very practical jobs. But eventually, I mean, as I talk about in the book, I got to this point where I was actually working in entertainment, and it was very exciting to get my foot in the door. But then from the very first job, I sort of knew this isn't that great. You know, the first day as a television writer, I walked in expecting some sort of welcome wagon or at least some sort of orientation. And I just came in there and there was no one there. No one told me what to do. I had no idea what was expected of me. And that was kind of the pattern all throughout my writing career. You know, it was just being thrown to the wolves, and left to fend for myself. So it was just, you know, job after job of long hours, no work-life balance to speak of, a lot of toxic workplace culture and politics, a lot of office politics and on-set politics. And after 10 years, I just had enough. And when I left in 2009, I had gotten to this point where I didn't even want to write anymore. This lifelong passion that I had for storytelling had been extinguished by the business of entertainment. And I knew that the only way that I would ever be able to kind of, you know, rediscover that passion was to work through all this baggage that I had and to process these experiences that I'd had. So I just started writing about it. And, you know, just how I always did all through my life, you know, this is how I would process my life experiences through writing. Didn't know it was a book at first. It was probably about six chapters in when I finally admitted to myself that it was a book. that is the story of how this book came about.
Well, it's interesting you say that you process your feelings through writing. I'm curious in the crowd how many people would agree that they do the same thing. This is a pretty natural tendency, and yet not everybody turns it into a published novel, right? Mm-hmm. You can use the medium to self-soothe, to exercise, as Brittany Mean said when we were together. Yeah. But it's another decision to say, okay, I want this book out in the world, and I feel comfortable with airing all of this about my family and my job and everything. So at one point, I know you had six chapters and you were like, I'm writing a book. Mm-hmm. Did you ever think like, okay, well, should I just hide this, or is this definitely for public consumption?
Oh, every day I ask that question.
Do you want to hide it now?
Sometimes. That's part of why it took me so long to finish this project, because, you know, I mean, it didn't literally take 12 years to write the words in this book. It was a lot of it was the process of, you know, just getting over the fear of people knowing all this stuff about me, you know, and also the fear of, well, are people going to be mad at me if I say things about them that are not flattering? You know, I would have nightmares about that, about my ex-boyfriend like chasing me through the streets, you know. So I think that every memoir writer probably goes through that. You have to get over that feeling of being completely vulnerable and naked to the world. And it's still something that I grapple with, you know. It's very surreal to have all of this very personal stuff out there.
Yeah, it's really, it's been...
Oh, you know, you wrote one too.
No, I was talking more about your being thrown into the deep end of publicity.
Oh,
because
yes.
At the beginning, when Patty's book first came out, if you're not aware, there was a huge Time excerpt, and then like every media outlet picked up all of these talking points about France. I probably should not bring more attention to this bad time of now you're all going to Google it. But anyway, so it was a quick, had to be a quick learning curve of how to handle all of that. So, I'm sorry about that.
No, I mean, I was, maybe this was naive, but I did not expect so much attention on this book. You know, I just thought it didn't seem like there was a lot of, you know, fodder for tabloids in it, but they'll find it. Yeah. they were mining the book for little tidbits that they could use for headlines. But now I can laugh about it, you know. Like at first it was very shocking, but now I know just ignore it.
I think this is emblematic of what people do with books to begin with, right? We all open up a book and take out different things from it. So the people who want the entertainment and the Hollywood pieces, they got that. Mm-hmm. But there's something else in this book that's so interesting, which is how do you know when it is time to part ways with a job? I mean, not everybody, but there are many not great jobs out there or situations where you feel stuck. But do you have the courage, or do you have enough of a next step or self-knowledge to know that, you know what, this is not going to get better and I need a full-on shift, even though I'm in a glamorous field that people would kill to be in. Mm-hmm. So how did you know that this was it for you, and how did you gain the courage to make that call?
It took a long time because of what you said. You know, it's when you break into a business that's that exclusive, and you know, you work so hard to get there, it is hard to walk away because you're like, oh, I invested so much in this already and I've sacrificed so much, and people are, you know, covet this job, so I should be grateful for it even though it's making me miserable. And that is the conversation that I had with myself day after day for years. But I just got to the point where I was falling apart, you know. I mean, my mental and physical health were really bad. You know, I had all sorts, I talk about this in the book. I had all
Maybe
sorts
go
of,
into that a little more.
I had, I had mean? TMJ. I, cause I was grinding my teeth. in my sleep. And I would wake up like every morning feeling like somebody had punched me in the face. And I had hemorrhoids.
Daddy. Okay, we're going there. We're really going there.
I mean, it's an occupational hazard for writers. I mean, we were sitting on our butts all
day
long.
They needed an exhibit here for that.
They do.
Need like a, you know, a whole
they
second.
They do. I mean, it's no joke. I mean, as a TV writer, you're in your seat for 12 hours a day. That was a problem that I had to deal with like all the time. And it's embarrassing, but I wasn't the only one. I know that for a fact.
Great.
But yeah, and I was just, you know, I was emotionally, I was just a mess. You know, I was also in a long-term relationship with another television and film writer, and our relationship was not going well. We had a lot of problems, and we never had time to deal with them. We never had the energy to deal with them. Yeah, I was just a mess, and I just knew that I couldn't take care of any of these problems as long as I was still doing that job, because it was so all consuming. You know, it just took every ounce of energy and every second of the day. I just knew I had to get away from it if I was ever going to take care of myself and become happy.
It's amazing. So do you ever miss the star, not the star power, but the celebrity closeness, seeing culture being made right in front of you and having the whole world talk about what you're doing in the writer's room and all that? No, not at all.
No, I mean, honestly, I do not miss that at all, because I feel like when I was doing that job, I never felt that. I never felt that the glamour that you're talking, maybe once in a while, like when I went to the Dominican Republic with Salma Hayek and flew on Sammy Sosa's Gulfstream jet. That was kind of cool. That was cool. But it wasn't like that all the time. You know, most of the time we were locked away in a writer's room, you know, 24/7. And it was like, I never really got that glamour. And as far as feeling like I had contributed to pop culture or the things that people were talking about, it was like more often the feeling was my name would be on a script and I would feel no connection to it whatsoever, because that script had been completely rewritten by my boss, you know, or by all the other writers in the room. And that just happened so many times that I didn't feel that sense of ownership over anything the way that I do with this book, for instance.
Right. Well, it's also interesting because you have to share it with so many people. Mm-hmm. I mean, walking around this museum, it's a lot about the solitary process of writing and what each individual writer contributes and what are their habits and how do they do it and where are they in history. But there aren't, that I saw at least, any, except for the community section about book clubs, groups of people writing the way that they do in writers' rooms, or even people who collaborate on books to authors, because it's a totally different process. Mm-hmm. How do you know if you're going to be good at that or you're not going to be good at that? And
you don't know until you get there. Because I had always been a solitary writer. I think most people are when they start out. You sit there and you write a story by yourself. And the first time I wrote scripts, you know, sample scripts to try to get an agent, I did those by myself. It took me a couple of months to do them. And then as soon as I got employed as a television writer, you know, it was write with other people and do it in, you know, a couple of days, you know, finish the script in a couple of days. And that was such a culture shock for me. I didn't really even know how to do it at first. And then, you know, I learned, like, you sit there in a room and people are just sort of pitching out ideas. They're pitching lines of dialogue. They're pitching lines of action. And then someone's typing it up. And that's how you write as a group. But to me, it never felt natural. It never felt comfortable. And in order to succeed in that kind of environment, you have to be good at performing. You know, you have to be a little bit of a showman, especially if you're writing comedy. You know, you have to be able to pitch jokes well. And that was something I never felt like I could do well. So that's something that I think a lot of people going into the business do not understand, is how much of that skill you have to develop.
Interesting. It's today with, you know, how easy it is to Google everything, and people, and you can Google anybody who's on the end credits of anything and figure out who are they, where are they on IMDb, what have they done. And the idea that you even got into this, and I know that part of it, and maybe you could tell a little bit about that story of how you broke in, but it's so unlikely for anybody to have broken in, and also the complete lack of transparency before versus now with books like this and so many other ways.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, so the thing that Zibby's alluding to is that my first, you know, taste of show business was I went to go see tickets to the Letterman show, because I was a big fan of the Letterman show. So I went to New York and went to 30 Rock and, like, you know, went up to an NBC page at the information desk and I said, can I get tickets to tonight's show? And he's like, people have written away for tickets for like months ago. But I got to talking to him about his job, and, you know, he was just a regular guy from Queens. And, you know, that was the first time I met somebody who actually worked in show business, and I realized that normal people can do this job. And I asked him, how would I get an internship at the Letterman show? Because I knew that they had college interns, because sometimes Dave Letterman would talk about them on the show. And so this page said, you just write a letter to the producer and they'll bring you in for an interview. And I just thought, it cannot be that easy. But it was. And so I wrote the letter, got called in for an interview, and got the job. And that was the first time I worked in show business. And that page ended up being my boyfriend for 10 years. That's that's also in the book.
Yeah. More details to uncover. You'll have to read to find out. I bet people are wondering what the PS is of the story. You left show business. Obviously, you've written this memoir. What else? What's gone on since you made that decision? Did you go into like a total funk and thought like, oh my gosh, I'll never work again? Or were you just like upbeat and,
oh God,
I'm just going to go to yoga every day? I'm kidding.
No. I've been in many funks since then. Yeah. I mean, this book was a lifeline in some ways, because it allowed me to, you know, rediscover that love of writing. It gave me something to do. It gave me some structure in my life. And there were times I thought, well, I should go find a job. I should get some sort of job. you know, especially after my TV money ran out, I was like, I really should get a job. I was very lucky that I married a great guy who, you know, has been supporting us. And, you know, and every time I said to him, I need to go get a job, he was like, you need to finish this book. I mean, he was just so supportive of it. And I have done some other work. I do background acting sometimes. And
you can just go behind me and act. You know, I can, we have some cameras going. So.
Yeah, that's a whole other story, because that's a really weird thing to go from being behind the scenes as a writer to then being in front of the camera, you know, albeit in the background, blurry most of the time. But in some ways, that's been really fun, because I, as a background actor, I'm not in control of anything. Like, you know, that sort of lack of responsibility is really refreshing. Yeah. And so I've also just been doing, you know, any sort of creative project that seems interesting to me. I learned how to sew. So I make clothes. I make costumes. I get super obsessed with Halloween costumes.
We are in the market for a werewolf costume.
Oh boy!
If you want to make us that,
I don't know if I'm that good.
Okay. All right. Hopefully we can push that aside. So, being that this is a writer's museum, I'm curious about your process. We have all these amazing typewriters behind us, and you seemed very comfortable just hopping next to one and getting going. For writing the memoir, tell us what that looked like for you.
Well, you know, my process of writing this book changed a lot over the years. You know, at first, I was pretty disciplined about it because I kind of had to be, just because I had so much resistance to writing at that point. So I set up a lot of practices for myself to try to help myself get through this trauma. And, you know, when I say trauma, like I'm talking about, you know, having written for TV, there was just a lot of just rejection constantly, you know, constantly having my ideas, you know, shot down in really cruel ways, having my work rewritten to the point where it was unrecognizable, often getting no feedback at all. You know, that's another form of sort of like, you know, trauma as a writer. And what I did was I made sure that I had a lot of supports for myself as I was going through this process. And I would sit down and meditate for a few minutes before I would write. And then while I was writing, I would keep a little notebook on my desk and I would write down all the negative self-talk in my head while I was writing to just get sort of an arm's length from it so that I could see that these things that were going through my head were not helpful to me and I could just try to ignore them. And then after I would write, I would sit down and I would meditate again and I would sort of like just kind of counsel myself through it. And that was really helpful. You know, after doing that for a long time, I felt like I could write again without just this barrage of negativity going through my head. And then later on, you know, after I got past that sort of, you know, what I think of as a rehab period, then I could write in a much more casual way. So I would just sometimes write for a couple of hours a day and then go do other things. And sometimes I would go for months without writing at all, just if I got involved in some other project or I was traveling or doing some other things, you know, but I always came back to it. I just always knew deep down that I wanted to finish it.
On the wall over there, there's this whole ode to writers, and I'm sure all of you have seen this before, but as a writer myself and someone who has sort of identified myself that way, even though recently I can say I'm an author, but I've always been a writer, to see, first of all, a whole museum dedicated to like what we do is just like mind-blowing, something that is feels so personal. But over here on the wall, it also talks about different habits and things like that that affect the writer. So I just wanted to do a speed
round. Oh, you mean the donuts and cheese?
Yes, don't skip to the donuts. So there are four little quadrants over there. So the first one is, and I can answer too, and I can open it up because I'm curious other people's answers to this as well, but go-to snack while you're writing.
I don't eat while I write.
Ugh, so annoying. All right, I eat a lot when I'm writing. Chocolate-covered almonds are one of my favorite things.
Okay. I would get too distracted by my food.
That's the whole point. It's like, okay, animal by your side.
Dog.
Dog. Anyone? Any dog people? Cat people? There's snail on the wall. Any snail people? No? What are the other ones? Anytime, when do you write? Anytime, morning, night, afternoon, when is your favorite time to write?
You know, it used to be at night, like when I was younger, like in my late 20s, early 30s, I used to love writing at 10 o'clock at night. That was the magic hour for me. I was like, oh, it's so creative at 10 p.m. Now, I can't even imagine looking at my computer at 10 o'clock at night. I'm like in bed, you know? Now I would say, I know this is boring, but like early afternoon.
It's not boring.
because I know that a lot of people swear by, you know, writing in the morning, your mind is clear and fresh and all that stuff. But I like to take care of my emails and all of my admin tasks in the morning so that I can get that off my plate. And then I'll feel freer to be creative.
I remember when we were in Toronto, I went to dinner with four like big deal authors and we were talking about writing habits. They're like, no, you have to do it. You have to start writing the moment you wake up. Mm-mm. Like, don't do anything else. Just like your mind is in a totally different state. And I remember I got up and it was like dark out. I like knock over, broke a glass, like trying to find my computer. I was like, I cannot write now. I can't even think.
Yeah, no. I'm not good in early in the morning.
No, need a little time. there was one other, but I can't remember what it was. but if I think of it, I'll ask it. What are your hopes and dreams going forward?
I would love to write more books. I mean, this was so great. I mean, it was hard. It was very hard at times, but it was hard in a way that was rewarding, as opposed to hard in a way that is totally not worth it. I would just love to write more books. You know, I mean, I'm not a big dreamer. Like, I don't make big plans for the future. We talked about this before. I think it's because when I was younger, I was so ambitious and driven, and I just don't have the energy for that anymore. And I just feel like, I feel like it's better to keep my expectations small and then be delighted when things turn out well.
You're like a college athlete who quit the sport and now will like never play tennis again or something.
I'm a bit of a slacker, I think, at heart.
I don't think you're a slacker. In case anyone was wondering, the reason why I'm interviewing Patty here tonight is I am actually her publisher. So I started a publishing company called Zibby Books after many years doing a podcast called Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, where I kept hearing the same complaints from a lot of different authors about the industry and who's going to fix publishing, da, 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 da. And I guess I'm not a slacker, because anytime I hear a problem, I'm like, okay, enough of this. Let me like fix something. Let me try and fix something. So it took me a little while, but eventually I was like, well, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could do that. I always have lots of ideas. And so finally I said, you know what, I'm just going to try it. If I mean, maybe it's me, maybe I'm the one who's going to make a difference. Why not? So I started a publishing company, and one of the things that is most important to me in doing this is making sure authors have a great experience, mm-hmm. and that they get to go on tour and go to places like Chicago and great mm-hmm. museums like this, and have everything from brand partnerships to touring to input, and just the way to make an author feel special. Because as we all know, the publishing industry, it's tough. I mean, and it can be really discouraging, I won't lie. But you can't give up, because the power of books is so important, and we just can't give up. And I feel like this place is dedicated to that mm-hmm. that spirit as well. So anyway, mm-hmm. that was just a little tidbit on how
I feel like, you know, because this book, you know, I started writing it like 13 years ago, and there were many times in the last 13 years where I thought, oh, this is the right time to be publishing my book. I should be publishing my book now. Like when the hashtag MeToo movement happened, I was like, oh, this is the time that I should be publishing my book. But it wasn't ready, you know, and it just wasn't ready until now. And I am so grateful that this is the time, because this is the time that Zibby Books has started.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the writer's strike.
Well, no. Okay,
that was actually fabulous timing for this book to come out.
It was that too, but that, and also Zibby Books being kind of the perfect publisher for me to have this experience where I really felt valued as a writer, as, you know, that my words were valued, you know, and that my experience and my process was valued. That was really important to me as well. So thank you for that.
You're welcome for that. I'm curious if people in the audience have questions. We're allowed to do that, right? Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask folks to, if you have questions, raise your hand and wait for the microphone so that the folks waiting online can hear your questions. I wanted to start with one online, actually, which is for Patty. What kind of books do you want to write?
I don't know yet.
Make something up. She wants to write graphic novels.
Definitely not that. I used to, there was a time where I thought, while I was writing this book, that I wanted to just write memoirs. I was just so into writing this memoir that I'm like, I'm just gonna write memoirs. But now that I've written this one and I've gone through the promotion of this one, I'm like, maybe not another memoir for a while. there's just a certain scrutiny, you know, that you go through as a memoir writer. And I don't know how much more of that I can take right now. So, but I mean, definitely I would want to write a novel. But whatever it is, I just want it to be something that I feel excited about, you know?
First, I'd like to say how much I've enjoyed the evening so far. It's great to be here with you. And I just wondered if you could describe the difference between writing screenplay material, visual material, and writing a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a screenplay, you know, or a script is, it's like a kind of like a blueprint, because you know that there are going to be other collaborators working on it, like a director and actors and the set designer and all of, you know, the props people and everything. And I mean, that's what it's designed to be. It's a collaboration. And so when you're writing a script, you don't put in a lot of description or any of those elements, because, you know, that's other people's jobs. And it's actually considered to be bad screenwriting when you put a lot of that type of description in there. So I, you know, was trained that way. I was, you know, trained to write in that very sparse way. And then when I started writing this book, you know, my prose came out very, you know, flat in a lot of places. And I had to kind of retrain myself to fill it out more with deep sensory details and stuff like that, to just really make sure that the reader felt like they were in the scene with me. So I would say that's kind of the biggest difference. But, you know, also I feel like, you know, when you're writing a script, it's, you have to have a really strong plot, and it has to have a beginning, middle, and end sort of three-act structure, you know, that's what works for the screen. And when you're writing a book, you know, it doesn't have to follow those rules. And I've read novels that didn't have a whole lot happening in them, but they're still great because they have such a great voice, and they're just, you know, it's just a compelling language. But you can't do that with the screen. It just doesn't work. It doesn't translate to the screen that way.
Hey, I was just wondering, was obviously you loved screenwriting at some point. You saw it after it, you know, you went down to Letterman and got on the show. What was there one moment, like one day in particular, that you were like, you know what, I don't really love this as much as I used to?
It wasn't one day. It was many, many days. Yeah, I mean, there were just so many experiences of that where, you know, I would get excited about writing something, and then, you know, I would write it and then it would get rewritten, or, you know, I would pitch an idea and it wouldn't, you know, land, or we would be shooting something and it just wouldn't come out the way that I had pictured it. I mean, it was just like disappointment after disappointment. So I can't really pinpoint any one moment where it dawned on me.
Yes, Patty, Bob Nelson. I had a question about your experience, and I misinterpreted, but about like leaving the industry. I that's how I interpret that you left the industry. But could you at one time think, you know what, I guess maybe 15, 20 years ago, I could still see myself in this industry. It's changed, you know. Or was this just a blanket thing that no matter what, you change the time, you change the place, you change the people, it's still going to be the same result?
So are you asking if I would ever go back?
I just wondered if you went through that thought process at that time, or even now, thinking, you know what, well, I'm not saying you made the wrong decision, but
right.
I'm just wondering, you know, the industry does change, you know, and some more than others. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that it's not exactly the way it was as it, you know, was 15 years ago when I left. You know, I mean, I think some things probably have improved a bit. There's definitely more diversity, you know, in writers' rooms now, and more women in power, you know, stuff like that. I do think there's probably been some improvement in that sense, but I don't know. I never looked back and said, oh God, you know, I wish I hadn't left. I just never, and maybe that's just my personality, but like when I walk away from something, I don't look back. I don't, you know, think about my ex-boyfriends and go, oh, I, you know, wonder what he's doing. Like, I never Google any of my ex-boyfriends.
No second guessing, no snacking. I can't even relate to Patty at all.
Have you had anyone react to the group, to the, your memoir, who was really angry at you?
Not yet. Yeah, I mean, so far, everyone that I've heard from has been really positive, and it's actually been great to hear from so many people who read the book and felt like, you know, that it spoke to them. And some a lot of these people don't have anything to do with show business. You know, I think a lot of people can relate to the experience of working so hard for something and then having it turn out to not be what they wanted. And also just getting burnt out in whatever field they're working in. Like, I've heard that from people who work in the medical fields and just everybody. So that's been really gratifying to hear. Also, it's really fun to hear from people that I used to work with who went through these experiences with me, who have reached out to me and said, "You nailed it. You know, you got it totally right." That's so cool to hear. You know, I've kind of reconnected with a lot of those folks. So that's cool.
We did take over Patty's Instagram account, so she would never know.
Yeah. That's true. I said, just delete all
She's
the
like,
haters.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
Hi, Delaney Parrish. What would you say to a young person who wanted to go into television writing? Do you think maybe it just wasn't for you, or would you just completely discourage them? And even if they wanted to be a writer, tell them to go another path.
Are you that young person?
No, I'm not that young person. Okay. I am a person who worked really hard for a decade to get a job that I then quit because I hated it. So that resonated with me, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I usually advise people to not do it. You know, why would I tell anybody to do it after what I'd been through? It just would be hypocritical to say that. So I try to discourage people if they ask me for that advice, but usually they don't listen. Because when people get determined to get into show business, nothing will talk them out of it. That's what I've learned.
We have a question from someone watching online who wants to know, when you're working on sitcoms, how do you stay creative day after day?
You don't. That's part of the problem. And it's not just sitcoms. It's on any show. You know, this is part of the inherent problem in the entertainment business, is that it's a business, and you have to come up with material on a really tight schedule, on a schedule. And creativity doesn't work that way. And especially, you know, when you have to pump out, you know, like episode after episode, like back in the days when I worked in TV, you know, a lot of these shows would be on for 23 episodes a season. And so we always ran out of ideas, you know, it was like constantly trying to come up with new ideas. And I really worried that, you know, that I was just never going to have any new ideas. Especially because I was spending so much time in the writer's room that I didn't have time to have a life, you know? And it really bothered me, because I started when I was young. I was like 26 years old, and it bothered me that my life was passing me by outside of work, and I wasn't able to participate in it. And I knew as an artist, I wasn't going to have anything to write about.
I think there's also this assumption when you're young that you're going to figure out what you're supposed to do, and like your first job is going to be it. And it like almost never is. I have one person I went to college with who still does the same thing at the same company, and that's it. And I think it's part of growing up and figuring out who you are is being able to change. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know. Now I'm lecturing you like you're my kids or something.
Hi, I just wanted to thank both of you and reiterate. Thanks for being here. And Zippy, I want to thank you. I've been following you for years. Thanks for what you're doing for publishing. Hooray. And this book sounds so relatable. I left a career as an advertising copywriter and wrote a couple novels and got them published, which is great. But it's not the end of the road there, is it? So I was wondering if both of you could answer this question. Can you speak to the joy, the humanity, and the meaning of writing and producing books in this current climate? I hate to bring up AI, but you know, just the plethora, and how do you feel about that?
I personally find a lot of joy in the writing process, sometimes a lot of stress also, hence the almonds. But I feel like deep down that what I have to say is going to help somebody else. And that might just be, you know, self-aggrandizing in some way, but I feel like by sharing who I am and how I feel, even though it's not, you know, I haven't like scaled mountains or done anything so out of the ordinary, but by sharing the pieces of our own lives, there's probably somebody else out there who, when they hear it, it helps. Like, I'm on a kick now to, I finally started going back to the doctor, which I've been posting about on Instagram at Zibby Owens, if you want to follow me, which I post like 800 times a day. But, you know, I can write about it and I can write an essay about it. And then I have people be like, oh my gosh, you know, my mom died of heart disease. And this is finally what got me to make an appointment. I'm going next week. That's what it's all about for me. It's not about having a collection of pages sitting on a shelf, which maybe nobody's picking up, but I think it's remembering that even if you change one person's life, that's huge, and not focusing as much on the numbers, right? Why is my book scan number not this? Why is, you know, oh my gosh, great, good for you, congratulations, 750,000 copies, woo, little emojis. But, you know, if you change 25 people's lives for the better, if you save lives, if you just like make people laugh, if you encourage people to leave jobs which aren't using their best selves and instead go write beautiful memoirs that inspire other people, I think that's worth it. So even though it is hard and it is a slog and book marketing is just so hard and it's very difficult to break through the noise, you have to keep trying. You just have to keep trying, because if not, maybe that person out there won't get what they need when they need it. So that's what keeps me going. Oh, thank you. Your turn. The joy. Wait, was it for both? I think it was for both of us. The joy in this current climate of writing.
I don't think about the climate. Like, I just think about the joy of writing. Like, I've always felt joy in writing. And the only time I don't feel joy in writing is when I let all the external stuff in, you know, and I start thinking about like what other people think, or I don't know, whatever. It's like when I'm just there, you know, in my writing, communing with my words, that's always joyful. And, you know, and I love that my book has been able to reach people, and, you know, and I've, you know, heard from people that I feel the personal connection with people through this book, which is amazing. Like, but that to me is a bonus, you know, because for me, just the act of expressing myself through words is the joy. And it doesn't matter to me if it like helps save lives. I'm not as altruistic as Zibby.
I mean, I also have fun. I really enjoy it. I do it better than other things, you know.
I think just, you know, because I think also women get the question a lot of like, you know, why do you write, or what, you know, what is the purpose of writing this book? And a lot of women feel like they have to help people in order to feel like that it's worth them writing a book. And I feel like, no, it's okay to just want to express yourself.
Patty, you were writing during what I think of as a golden age of episodic television. And now we're getting into a different model with streaming, and, you know, not necessarily episodic television, but, you know, you'll have a novel or an episode. We just watched one about the Sackler family and opioid crisis, a fictionalized account. Could you see writing in a different atmosphere? Let's say you write a successful novel. Someone wants to film it, and you say, no, I will produce it. I will choose the director. I will write the script. I'm not going to be in a room with other writers. I want to be in control. Can you see getting involved in broadcast entertainment or films with a different model?
I mean, if I ever wrote a novel and it was optioned, you know, to be made into a movie or a show, I wouldn't say no to it. And I would probably want some creative control over it. but I don't know how involved I would want to be in, like, you know, writing the screenplay for it or any of that, just because I've, you know, done that, and I don't particularly want to deal with executives or, you know, dumb notes from executives. I would rather farm that out to somebody else. But yes, I would absolutely want to have some creative control over it.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about your career being all consuming. And so yeah. I can imagine that when you left, there may have been a bit of an identity crisis. Like, who am I if I'm not a TV writer? So I'm wondering what that was like and how you dealt with it. And then my other question is, I'm getting as many in as I can. What was the best writer's room experience that you had? Was there one that there was a lot of camaraderie? Like, what was the best, most positive experience?
Okay, I'm going to answer the second one first, and I'll totally forget what the first question was, so please remind me. Yes, so the best experience was by far Freaks and Geeks. That we had such a collaborative writer's room there. The creator, Paul Feig, who wrote the pilot, and Judd Apatow, who was helping him run the show, they were absolute mensches. They were so good to everybody, and they really knew that in order to get the best material from everyone, they had to make everyone feel like it was a safe space for them to pitch ideas and to, you know, feel like we could just share all of our personal experiences, because a lot of the show's stories were based on personal experiences. But it was really, I mean, it was the only writer's room I was in where I really felt like that, not the only one, but that was definitely the most collaborative and the most fun. So what was the first question?
The identity crisis.
Yes. So I did have an identity crisis, and I still have an identity crisis. It's, I don't know if it's ever going to be resolved. I just, you know, for so long, I hung my self-esteem on, you know, my job. And even though I hated my job, it was important to me to see myself as, you know, having this job that was, you know, well regarded. And so, yeah, after that was gone, you know, I did struggle a lot with it. And then I struggled a lot with it, you know, when I was trying to get this book published. And I was like, if I don't get this book published, what have I done with my life for the last 10 years? You know, and so it's an ongoing process. But if there's anything I want people to take away from this book, it's that you don't have to hang your self-worth on your job. You know, like, I feel like so many people in our society define themselves by their work. And of course, work is an important part of our lives, but it shouldn't be our whole lives. And it shouldn't be, you know, the source of, you know, how we feel about ourselves, you know, because there's so many things that you can't control in your job. So, yeah, I just feel like that's, I really want to promote that idea. Just this notion of, like, you, there's so many roads to joy that have nothing to do with our work.
Well, with that, I think I would, I don't even have to ask. You guys know what to do. I love it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.